just about every 4 years, a task force made up of multiple government agencies publishes the National Climate Assessment. The report is seen as a useful tool in understanding the state of the world's climate. But the next edition could look different based on a recent move by the Trump administration to limit some of the data published in it. Now, worst-case scenario data will not automatically be included in the report and others like it, and scientists worry the narrowed scope of data could mislead the public. The National Climate Assessment is one of many reports that could be impacted by rules changes. Steph Tai is with us now, professor of law at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Steph, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, can you talk about this National Climate Assessment and what we do with it?
So the National Climate Assessment has come out, you know, once every, like you said, 4 or 5 years. And it's useful for the public, both in understanding the state of climate science, but also for planners to plan around the current state of climate science. So that'll do things like show types of precipitation changes as a result of changing climate, things like stream flow changes, a lot of different changes. So it's useful both for just sort of scientific purposes, but also for planning purposes as well.
So a state agriculture department might use that, a city planner, especially in a coastal city, say, might be interested
right.
in this kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And the worst case scenarios are especially important in sort of planning kind of scenarios, right? You want to know whether or not the likelihood of flooding increases in an area. And especially in a lot of areas, there are regulations that are specifically designed around anticipating floods. For instance, the 100-year, 500-year floodplain is a term that you'll hear in planning documents. And a lot of that necessitates understanding what the likelihood of flooding is in those time frames.
Now, it looks like there's a couple key changes potentially in the works here, including one, James Riley, the appointed director of the U.S. Geological Survey, also recently ordered that computer-generated data reported in these assessments only go up to 2040 instead of the end of the century, which I believe is what they've been doing. What difference does that make as we look at these reports?
Right. Well, like I mentioned, for instance, a lot of states have their planning requirements. Wisconsin has a sort of comprehensive planning requirement for municipalities to sort of set forth basically 20-year plans. Now, right now, right, it's 2019. Some of the times at which municipalities will be on the slate for having this 20-year plan put forth will have to involve data that extends past 2040, right? Just to sort of anticipate this kind of comprehensive planning. So it's going to affect very directly a lot of planning efforts like this. It affects a lot of other larger kind of infrastructure efforts as well. If we're going to change the national infrastructure, having ideas of where to build things to avoid flooding and things like that is important to understand past 2040.
Now, this not publishing the worst case scenarios, one of the arguments that we've heard from the Trump administration is, okay, this worst case assumes that we don't do anything about carbon emissions. So that in itself means it's not really going to happen. It's not something we should be focusing on. It just scares people. It exaggerates the problem. What do you say to that?
Well, there's a lot of sort of dispute in the academic community in general, like the risk community, about sort of worst case scenario. Does it draw people's attention to the most frightening kind of experience? However, with respect to this particular type of worst case scenario, that is with greenhouse gas emissions, not lowering, that actually is a very likely worst-case scenario, especially given the types of changes that the Trump administration is making in a lot of other areas in terms of deregulating carbon emissions.
What have the trends been that you've seen in the Trump administration so far when it comes to those regulations of emissions?
Well, one thing that's anticipated that's going to come out, or that has already come out, but there's going to an anticipated challenge is going to happen this summer, is the rollback of the Clean Power Plan, right? So the Clean Power Plan was a move by the Obama administration to limit basically the emissions of greenhouse gases from power plants. And the rollback of it is likely to at least remove some of the regulatory barriers for carbon emissions. Now, there's a lot of other things going on, too, in terms of the economics of sort of fossil fuels versus other types of things. But at least on the regulatory side, right, there's less sort of control over it.
And there's also, we've seen in the news, negotiations and predictions over the Arctic region of the world in particular, and the Trump administration saying that this international report shouldn't include talk about global warming or climate change as we look at the future of the Arctic. What do you make of that?
Right. Again, this is falling under a larger pattern that's actually being kept track of by Columbia Law School. It's called, I think, the Silencing Science Initiative, that tracks a number of ways in which the Trump administration has advocated for sort of less available data upon which regulators, planners, and even scientists can use in terms of approaching climate change.
Is there another good source of this kind of breadth of data that the scientific community can turn to?
Well, the interesting thing is the scientific community can attempt to design around it, right? But that takes research funding, right? A lot of this kind of data, for instance, the USGS data, is helpful for scientists because you have this one uniform source of information that they can use to sort of create their own models and compare different models. Without that kind of thing, you're going to have scientists basically reinventing the wheel. And they might reinvent a number of wheels that makes it difficult to compare their own models in other areas with each other.
Talking to Steph Tai, professor of law at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Steph researches the interactions between environmental and health sciences and administrative law. We're looking at changes in the Trump administration on what kind of data is going to be included in future climate-related reports. A lot of people may hear 2040. That sounds pretty distant. We're doing computer projections. How valid are these kind of predictions if we're going out past two, three decades to the end of the century?
Well, one thing that's important to keep to remind yourself is that climate predictions are not like weather predictions, right? We see weather predictions, and those can be very drastically off. But climate predictions are sort of more overall patterns, and those have become more and more accurate over time. In fact, the whole state of climate science has been the process of developing models, seeing whether the models actually match what happened, and then refining those models. And so to the extent that there's uncertainty, it's becoming less and less.
Now, in conjunction with this move from the Trump administration, there's an effort to create a new climate review panel by the White House. It would be led by the physicist William Happer, who has attacked and passed the science of climate change. Some even within the president's cabinet have pushed back on this. What are your impressions of this news, kind of viewed as a plan B, a different look at climate at the White House?
Right. A lot of that has been very controversial in the scientific community, because instead of having, you know, the bulk of peer-reviewed science, right, making these decisions, it's going to be the sort of independent panel which doesn't represent the overall scientific community, right? If you look at all of the studies that are out there, the studies aren't just studies. They don't exist alone. They've been reviewed by other scientists. They've been published by journals that have also been reviewed. You know, there's a sort of larger network that is in place that the Trump administration is proposing to replace with this smaller kind of panel.
So for local planners, getting back to that local level, what do they do in the absence of this kind of data that could be removed from the White House? What resources would there be for them to plan, again, for possible impacts of climate change?
They might have to rely upon sort of local scientists who are trying to do these kinds of independent studies. Again, the likelihood that there will be, you know, some particular research that's done in that area will be, you know, it'll be up in the air. They might not also be able to look for it, right? Local planners are not necessarily trained in sort of scientific research. They're not necessarily trained in terms of vetting individual studies. And having some individual, like one single unified source to look to in planning is much more helpful than having them sort of dig up this kind of scientific research themselves.
One possible scenario is this happens now. It goes away for 2 years. There could potentially be a change of administration or not in 2 years. Is it easy to recreate what was lost over that, say, two-year span?
Well, in terms of, for instance, the worst-case scenario thing, if things change in 2 years, that'll be around the time of the next national climate assessment anyway. So that won't necessarily matter. In terms of the sort of modeling past 2040, some of that can be recreated, and some of it is likely to be recreated, like I mentioned, in universities, because universities are going to have to use that data for other types of research. So some of it might be recreated, but it will be more sort of, it'll be more spotty. It won't be as uniform according to the sort of data sets that are already there with the USGS.
What are we seeing when it comes to federal funding of climate-related research? Have we seen a big, not within government agencies now, but at, say, universities?
Well, I mean, the federal government government is often the ones that are funding this. So there's been funding drops within the National Science Foundation. There's, I think, also been funding drops within NASA, which has also funded a lot of sort of scientific data. And the other thing, too, is that it's not just sort of funding for science at universities, but university science often relies upon these large data sets generated by the government. And without access to that data set, they either have to regenerate that data or they're going to work in the absence of that. So that is also an impact that goes beyond funding.
Now, dealing with climate change, there's the scientific side of it. There's also political and economic arguments and about the trade-offs you make as you try to deal with this. Can you talk about the importance of having that science and that research available and accessible as people try to weigh those trade-offs?
Well, one thing that maybe will be, you know, maybe will address your question is that this is something that one of the areas in which that trade-off is expressly being made is the insurance industry, right? The insurance industry is making that economic trade-off because they kind of have to, right, to decide what to insure, to decide what kind of risks are there. And they have to rely upon this kind of data to even design their sort of insurance portfolios. This is coming more and more in terms of sort of supply chain risks and stuff like that. They'll need to rely upon these data. And without things like worst-case scenario analysis, which is something that supply chain managers have to deal with all the time in terms of determining whether or not they can get this sourced ingredient from some country or not, you know, that's going to make it more difficult. Now, that said, I think that the insurance industry is starting to recognize its role in making that trade-off, and we should see some sort of traction there.
We'll leave it there for now. Steph, thanks a lot for coming up to the studio today.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Steph Tighe is a professor of law at the University of Wisconsin Law School. We've been talking about a change in the way climate data would be reported under new guidelines from the Trump administration.